Hey everyone, welcome or welcome back to the podcast where we talk about all things psychology, mindset, and how we can start embodying this powerful femme fatale energy to really begin living our dream lives. I'm your host, Lauren Kuiper, and if this is your first time listening to the podcast, I think this is a great episode to start with, as imposter syndrome and self-sabotage are things that many of us have to deal with on a daily basis, regardless of our age or background. I feel like a lot of people talk about imposter syndrome, so I wanted to add something new to the conversation and really dive deeper into imposter syndrome and how it doesn't just apply to work or accomplishments, but even to our own interpersonal relationships. We also go into why we experience imposter syndrome and how we can overcome this cognitive distortion and how we can actually use imposter syndrome to our advantage. We then go on to discuss a little bit of self-sabotage and developing a growth mindset, as well as the truth about talent and hard work. So if any of this intrigues you, I invite you to please stay for the rest of this week's episode. So imposter syndrome has been a topic that I wanted to discuss here for a while, as I feel like it's something everyone either deals with or has at least dealt with at some point in their lives, especially those of us who are high-achieving baddies, which I know all my listeners are. So I really wanted to provide some of my own insight to this ongoing conversation over imposter syndrome, self-sabotage, and a variety of other topics I cover during this week's episode, as well as how we can actually get imposter syndrome to begin to work for us. So imposter syndrome in particular is something that I personally have dealt with in the past and even continue to deal with. I know that the majority of you guys listening are in your teens and 20s and 30s as well, which is definitely a demographic that really feels the impact of imposter syndrome as we begin to start out our careers and make those big life-changing moves. I wanted to start the episode out by giving a brief definition of imposter syndrome. So, Harvard Business School defines imposter syndrome as doubting your abilities and feeling like a fraud. It disproportionately affects high-achieving people who find it difficult to accept their accomplishments. Basically, to sum it up, imposter syndrome is the feeling of being an imposter or fraud and that you don't belong in your current position, whether that be career-wise or in your personal life. People who experience imposter syndrome often have fears that others have an exaggerated view of their abilities. They also fear being exposed as a fraud and that they have a continuous habit of downplaying their achievements. It disproportionately affects those who are perfectionists and happens to be more prevalent amongst those who experience anxiety. But it's not just limited to that demographic either. Actually, Psychology Today tells us that around 70% of adults have experienced imposter syndrome at some point in their lives. I personally find so much comfort in feeling that statistic because it kind of goes against the whole premise of imposter syndrome. The fact that we all feel like imposters, but at the same time, everyone else does, shows that we really aren't alone in this universal feeling nearly everyone has experienced. If everyone feels like an imposter at some point, then who really is? I think in some ways it's almost concerning not to feel imposter syndrome because it's really such an excellent indicator that we're growing. Growth is not easy, and in fact, it can feel really difficult and painful at times. If it didn't feel uncomfortable at times, then we would feel no pressure to advance and to change. So next time you might be feeling imposter syndrome over something, I'd like for you to take a moment to really reflect on the core of where that belief might be coming from and how it can really show you that there's an opportunity to grow there. Then there's an opportunity to learn more from the experience that you're having. Even the people that we perceive to be at the top, like our mentors or bosses or celebrities, experience it. It's easy for us to put these people on a pedestal, but it's important to realize that not everyone gets to the top by taking the stairs, so to speak. Some get to use the elevator. So if you've really put in the work to get to where you are more than deserving to be in the position that you have. So you may be wondering, where does imposter syndrome come from? And imposter syndrome can actually stem from a variety of different areas in our lives, but of course we can trace it back to, like most things, critical events in our childhood development. This is totally a side note, but I really want to do a podcast in the near future about how cognitive development in our childhood leads to our perception and experiences as an adult. I am so fascinated by childhood psychology. I think it'll make a great episode, so let me know if that's something you guys might be interested in. Sorry, I'm just so excited. Anyways, tangent done. So personally, I've often felt like an imposter in many areas of my life, both in my academic and professional life, as well as in my social and personal life. I know in my childhood experience, I often felt like I wasn't good enough to be in certain groups or clubs at school or have healthy relationships, and as a result, when I finally entered those spaces or achieved those milestones, it felt unnatural because I had internalized this belief that I was inherently incapable. I held onto that belief in most of my adult life too, seeking out situations and relationships that were honestly toxic because they reinforced this idea that I wasn't deserving or capable of having what others had. It sounds really shitty, but that's because it is. But I literally had this idea that I would never grow as a person unless I surrounded myself with people much older than me achieving what I wanted, regardless if they were decent people or not. Just so I could push myself in a very toxic way to become better because I really didn't believe that it could be easy for me. I honestly felt like personal growth in a position surrounded by supportive people was not possible for myself. I was so used to feeling like an imposter that I would have been so uncomfortable. Luckily, I'm at the point now where I don't feel like that would be the case for me anymore, which is such a relief because now I can actually enjoy the journey and celebrate my life every step along it, which in turn makes me recognize why I am deserving of the accomplishments and milestones that I reach along the way. As we know, imposter syndrome can show up in many areas of our lives, but one that's not talked about as much is how it shows up for us in relationships. Imposter syndrome in relationships can show up as feeling as though you can't keep your partner happy, believing that you must be perfect or your partner will leave you, fear that you're not good enough and that your partner will eventually find out that you are a fraud, worrying that other people wonder how your partner ended up with someone like you, and doing things you don't want to do because you worry your partner will abandon you. So as we can see, there's a lot of these that are born out of deep-seated insecurity, which can have a significant impact on relationships, leading those of us with imposter syndrome to seek constant reassurance from our partners. Unfortunately, this constant need for validation can become burdensome for partners and may contribute to relationship strain or even breakdown. Imposter syndrome can generate anxiety that prompts individuals to sabotage their relationships. They may believe it's better to end the relationship before their partner uncovers their supposed fraudulence. As a result, they may prematurely terminate otherwise healthy relationships due to their own self-doubt. At the very least, imposter syndrome can create a pervasive sense of anxiety that makes it challenging for individuals to fully engage and enjoy close, fulfilling relationships. Additionally, individuals grappling with imposter syndrome may find themselves emotionally withdrawing from their partners. Fearing exposure as a fraud, they may distance themselves emotionally to avoid vulnerability. This builds an intimate connection that becomes tumultuous within the relationship as emotional openness and closeness become challenging to achieve. Now, before we get into how to overcome the challenges of imposter syndrome and how we can actually make it work for us, I wanted to touch on a very common outcome of imposter syndrome, that is self-sabotage. Self-sabotage refers to the act of consciously or unconsciously undermining one's own success, well-being, or goals. It involves engaging in behaviors, thoughts, or patterns that hinder personal progress or prevent the achievement of desired outcomes. Self-sabotage often occurs as a result of deep-rooted fears, insecurities, or negative beliefs about oneself. Some common examples of self-sabotage include procrastination, the fear of failure or success, perfectionism, negative self-talk, excessive self-criticism, self-destructive behaviors such as substance abuse or excessive risk-taking, avoiding opportunities for growth, and sabotaging relationships or opportunities for personal advancement. So as you can see, self-sabotage is very interlinked with imposter syndrome. Self-sabotage can manifest in various areas of our life, such as career, relationships, health, and personal development. It can be driven by a fear of the unknown, a lack of self-belief, or a desire to protect oneself from potential disappointment or rejection. Understanding the underlying causes of self-sabotage is essential in order to address and overcome these patterns. It often requires self-reflection, introspection, and the development of self-awareness to recognize self-sabotaging behaviors and thought patterns. Seeking support from therapists, coaches, or trusted individuals can also be beneficial in identifying and addressing these self-defeating tendencies, as well as listening to the Femme Fatale podcast. So, what can we do to help these self-sabotaging tendencies from showing up in our professional lives, personal lives, and relationships? The first step is always acknowledgement. Acknowledge that you're feeling this way and try to ask yourself why questions. The next step is trying to reframe these thoughts. This is a classic evidence-based technique for cognitive behavioral therapy in psychology, and it really works. What thoughts are you having now that might not be productive in getting to you to where you would like to be? All thoughts are here to tell us something. A thought that we might perceive as negative isn't necessarily negative when it shows us who we are and what we need to do to grow. The next step is visualizing all potential outcomes. It's easy to begin to spiral when we're stuck with the worst possible outcome. Recognizing that there's multiple ways a situation can go, just by opening yourself up to the possibility of other possibilities, you will naturally be pulled to better outcomes. And the last one is learning to celebrate your achievements. Okay, now let's get into some of the good stuff about what we can do to overcome imposter syndrome and self-sabotage, and how we can actually make it work for us. I think things really started changing for me on my journey to overcome imposter syndrome and self-sabotage once I began to adopt a new mindset. And you guys know that I talk about mindset all the time, and it's because it literally sets up our foundations of our success and how we experience and navigate the world around us. Mindset work honestly deserves its own episode or even a couple of episodes in itself to really get into it, so be on the lookout for those in the near future. But anyways, the mindset that I had to work on was definitely a mindset shift, and that was the way that I was identifying myself. How we perceive the world and create experiences is a direct reflection of what we think and feel about ourselves on a core level. For example, if someone were to come up to you and say, "That's a fucking ugly red shirt," but you were wearing a green shirt, your response wouldn't be to internalize that. You'd probably go, "No, you're crazy. This shirt's green, girl. Bye." Another example I just thought of is Beyonce and her alter ego, Sasha Fierce. I remember I was watching an interview with her once, and she was explaining how whenever she got nervous or was about to perform, Sasha would come out and she would like embody this new state of confidence and ease, like she was meant to be on that stage. And of course, it's crazy to think that someone like Beyonce experiences these feelings too, but if Beyonce feels like she can't do a show as Beyonce, she has this alter ego she can lean back on. By the way, I'm going to see her in September with one of my best friends, and I could not be more excited. Anyways, now what if we apply that to our own experience with imposter syndrome? I'm not saying you need to make your own Sasha. You can if you want. Send me your alter ego baddie names, please. If we're claiming ourselves to be a fraud, naturally we will continue to see and experience that feeling. If someone were to say, "You can't do this," we're going to internalize that because it's who we are. But as soon as you show up as this alternative version of yourself who can do the thing or even better has already done the thing, these types of comments or experiences will no longer weigh you down. And watch how fast your imposter syndrome dissipates and you witness insane growth. Speaking of growth, I think we all know the importance of a growth mindset, which brings me to the next way we can handle imposter syndrome. If trying to embody a version of yourself that is already successful and belonging in whatever it is you're experiencing, imposter syndrome, is too hard, then a great way to look at this is to ask yourself, what is this feeling teaching me? I'm a big believer that the feelings we experience can be very useful tools if we're able to look at them from an outside perspective. Instead of getting wrapped in, oh my God, I can't do this, I'm a fake, try to reframe that experience into, okay, I see that I'm feeling like I don't belong here. Why am I feeling this way? Okay, because I can't do XYZ. Okay, why can't I do XYZ? And really start asking yourself those why questions. Either you'll get to a point where you realize that there really isn't a reason that you can't be where you are, or you will find out what you might need to do to improve yourself so you can feel like you do belong. For example, if you're at a conference meeting for work and everyone there has these specific skills that you don't have, do you feel working to improve those skills will make you feel better about belonging in your position? And that's the other thing. If you're at a job and you're working the same position as someone else who might have more experience than you or more credentials than you, and it's kind of making you feel like you're an imposter, please don't, because you are definitely hired for that position for a reason. Whoever hired you saw so much potential that you had and how much you had to offer and how fitting you were for that role. So if it wasn't for you, you wouldn't be there. I work in mental health, and I've experienced this with working with adults in certain care settings. It would always make me feel like I didn't belong there because I just felt weird being in my early 20s trying to lead groups for adult psych patients. They obviously were not about to listen to some young kiddo that could very well be their own child talking about the importance of mindset work and habit building. But you know, that's totally fine. We're in complete control of what we do and do not give attention to, which kind of ties back into the mindset shift by choosing to have a growth mindset and see imposter syndrome as what I can learn from and what I can do better. We're taking back control from a situation that can seem very much out of our control. Another tip that I find has helped me a lot is celebrating our accomplishments and the steps we took to get there. So I'd like for you guys to take a minute to write down a few of your major accomplishments you've achieved in your life so far. Maybe it was reaching a fitness goal or learning a new skill, getting your degree, starting a new job, or even just pushing yourself to make a new friend. If you have trouble doing this, there's no shame in asking a close friend or family member about what they've seen in you and what you've accomplished. I feel like we can be very hard on ourselves, and it can be difficult to recognize our strengths and our own accomplishments. But once we start recognizing these things within ourselves, we can start to rationalize why we are in the high-achieving positions we are in or have gotten the achievements that we do. The next thing I'd like for you to do is try and reverse engineer the steps you took to reach that milestone or accomplishment. Say you got an award for doing really well in school. Maybe you got valedictorian and you were asked to do a speech at your high school or college graduation. A common reaction to that could be, why me? I didn't do anything that really deserved a speech at a graduation. I just got good grades, but anyone could do that. And you kind of go into this spiral of downplaying your achievement. I want you guys to be able to start looking at it and like, well, yeah, I did get those good grades. I did work really hard for them. I had to make a lot of sacrifices, and I spent many late nights studying. I developed a method of studying that got me to reach my goals. And you see that the more you reverse engineer your process, the more you realize why you are deserving to be where you want to be. I also think a big part of what makes us feel like something isn't right for us is this idea behind talent and hard work. We see celebrities or famous athletes and think to ourselves, wow, they're so talented. But when it comes down to it, talent plays a very small role in becoming successful. Most of these talented celebrities out there didn't get to where they were just because they showed up for one or two auditions or a couple of games and made the team or got the role. What we don't see is the hundreds of hours they spent every day perfecting their craft.
What we don't see is all the quote-unquote failed attempts.
Which, by the way, I don't believe in the word failure, just opportunities to try again. The hard work is what really gets you there. So if you're holding back on pursuing a new hobby or making a career change or deciding to take up social media because you don't feel like you're talented enough or you're afraid it won't be perfect right away or that people you know from school or your friends are going to talk about you, well, I will tell you something. It's not about talent. Talent will take you 20% of the way, but hard work will take you the rest. It's not going to be perfect right away. I know the first episodes of this podcast were not perfect, and I'll probably cringe at them at some point, and maybe even this one too, and that's okay. And yes, your friends and people you know will talk about you, but who cares? No one else's thoughts and opinions should matter but yours, and as soon as you let the thoughts and opinions of others dictate your life, well, then that's when your life is no longer your own. So if you're thinking of trying something new or making a post or whatever, please do it. There's seriously room for everybody. And don't let anyone tell you that it's overdone or the markets are too saturated, because what the market doesn't have is your unique voice, your perspective. I heard this quote once that was along the lines of, "Every book written today is a rendition of Romeo and Juliet." And I think that's so true. There's always conflict. There's always good and evil. There's always a love interest that cannot be. And these are not new concepts and ideas, but it's how they are presented in new and exciting formats. Harry Potter wasn't the first book to tell a story about wizards, and it won't be the last. What makes Harry Potter interesting is the dynamic relationships between characters. It's a coming-of-age mystery novel before anything else. Same with whatever message you want to get out into the world. I almost didn't make this episode because I felt that imposter syndrome is a topic that has been talked about again and again on countless podcasts, and I would have nothing new to add to the conversation. But look at the irony in that. If you think just one person might find inspiration in what you have to offer, then do it. I think it was Kurt Vonnegut who said, "Write just to please one person." All right, I hope you guys enjoyed this bit of a longer episode. I know I really enjoyed making it. I love chatting on here with you all, and I really just enjoy making this kind of community of sharing ideas, and I really want to involve you guys more in the conversation as well. We talked about a lot of good stuff today. Imposter syndrome and how it doesn't just affect like you in the workplace, but also in relationships. We briefly touched on self-sabotage, and we also talked a lot about how we can make imposter syndrome and self-sabotage work for us, which I think is so important because I know a lot of us get like wrapped up, especially in psychology, with all these daunting terms like imposter syndrome and self-sabotage and like how we can avoid it. But I think it's really important to also recognize that our weaknesses can also at the same time be our strengths. We also talked a little bit about the myth of talent and hard work and just, yeah, a lot of other good stuff. So if you guys want to see any topics talked about on our show, please feel free to follow and send me a message at thefemmefatale.podcast on Instagram or my own personal account, which is at lauren.kuiper on Instagram as well. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope I get to see you all in the next one. Bye.